Alright, welcome back after an extended break to Criminal Procedure. And we have been, well, the last time I was actually here, again, it's been a while, so I apologize in advance for that. But last time we were talking about brief searches and seizures, and we defined what a search and seizure is. Today we are going to be expanding on that discussion of brief searches and seizures. And we're going to be talking in particular about one specific type of seizure, and that is a stop. As you remember from what we talked about, a seizure is pretty much just restricting one's ability to do something, and in particular, it's one's freedom to move or act for themselves. And so today we are going to be defining what a stop is and the standard that is required for officers to have before they actually conduct a stop. And that standard is reasonable suspicion. So we've got lots of things to talk about regarding this material and grounds for a stop. We've got several cases, pretextual stops, so on and so forth. And so let's just go ahead and work through the notes. And as I said, this is a while ago, so this might not be as fresh, but I'm beginning my study for criminal procedure. My final is next week, and so this is an excellent opportunity for me to review the material as well. Okay, so let's talk about stops. A stop may be constitutionally justified, one, if there is a warrant, and primarily if there is a warrant. But without a warrant, there needs to be either consent or an exigent circumstance. These circumstances can be used to retain or keep a suspect from fleeing or destroying any evidence. Those are your typical exigent circumstances, either keep them from fleeing or destroying evidence. There are more exceptions that have arisen just because of the frequency, the amount of times that officers actually stop individuals. And so outside of these, you need a reason for the stop, and that's going to be your reasonable suspicion definition. And what is reasonable suspicion? Well, it's an articulable set of facts that leads an officer to believe that a suspect has or is about to commit a crime. This is going to be less than probable cause, which is required to get a warrant, but it needs to be more than a hunch. The best definition that we have is actually from Terry, talking about Terry Frisks. This is not a Terry Frisk, but it is also, Terry Frisk also kind of involved a stop as well. But that definition is that it is a specific and articulable facts which, taken together with the rational inferences from those facts, reasonably warrant the intrusion. So we've got several cases. I'm not going to go into many of the facts of these cases. I might, just depending on what the case is. But I just want to illustrate how this principle kind of works. The first case that illustrates this principle is State versus Nelson. In this case, the officer only observed Nelson drinking one beer over the course of an hour. The officer was sitting in a parking lot and watching Nelson sit in his car. Only watched him drink one beer over the course of an hour, which would have put him under the legal limit. There was no prior evidence showing that Nelson had more to drink. There was no reason for any other stop because there was no evidence to show that he was above the legal limit. In other words, stopping Nelson in this kind of case would have just been a hunch and an unjustifiable stop. The dissent in this case did argue that this event did occur on Christmas Eve, and it's traditional on Christmas Eve to have more than one drink throughout the day, throughout the holiday. And so it would have been reasonable to assume that Nelson had more than one cup to drink that evening. And so the trial court would have been right to allow evidence of Nelson's drinking, which would have been giving grounds for a reasonable inference to make the stop. We have another case, State versus Dean. Here, all the circumstances did lead to that this was a reasonable stop. Specifically in this case, if you consider the time of day, if you consider the area where crime is in, if you look at if crime is higher in this area specifically, if this area is more uninhabited than other locations, well, these are all things that could lead to a reasonable suspicion. In this case, this was a high crime area where the stop actually occurred, and that factor alone can be enough to find reasonable suspicion. But you combine that with the other information about the time of day, meaning if it's late at night, and whether or not the area was uninhabited as well, well, then those things are going to make it more suspicious activity is going on. There is a dissent in this case as well, and they argued that simply waiting to see what the person was doing in a potentially parked vehicle, it's not up to reasonable suspicion. Again, it's just working on a hunch and it's speculation. In other words, the time of day, those other factors, the high crime areas aren't going to be enough to find reasonable suspicion. Then we have Sizer versus State. According to the majority in this case, if the robberies were disconnected, there was a series of robberies that were going on, and there was a stop that occurred, and the robberies associated with this stop, they were disconnected, so they cannot be used as a totality of the circumstances analysis, but there was still reasonable suspicion of an ongoing crime in this case. And so Sizer had tried to flee, and that increased his suspicion, and it allowed the stop to actually occur. So, in other words, in this case, Sizer was stopped by the officers, and that there was reasonable suspicion because this was a high crime area, and he tried to run away, although running away alone is not enough to justify or find reasonable suspicion. The dissent in this case argued that the lack of connected crimes was significant, meaning you can't stop somebody for a crime that you didn't commit, even though there are other crimes going on in the area. Again, that's not the majority position, but that is what the dissent said. According to Wardlow, which was a case relied on in this situation, if there was a high crime area and flight, well, then there is reasonable suspicion. Well, here, that was not the case because this wasn't the crime that the defendant was approached for, and so that's why that's how the dissent is trying to distinguish this situation from Wardlow. Let's go ahead and talk about pretextual stops. A pretextual stop is where the officers are going to engage in a stop for the purpose of one crime, but really they are there to investigate a different crime. If they have the reasonable suspicion for the initial stop, well, then they can still investigate the different crime, even if they have no reasonable suspicion in that crime. It's kind of an interesting situation, especially when it comes to vehicle stops. You can pull somebody over for a broken taillight, but you can at that time also do some additional stuff which may find some additional evidence for other material, even if that was not your initial goal. Our good example here is People versus Robinson. This case adopted the Supreme Court holding in Wren versus United States, and essentially it's just saying exactly what we've been talking about. As long as the officers had a reasonable suspicion for one stop, they're free to conduct the investigation of another crime, obviously within limits. And we'll get to those limits in other episodes. But simply asking whether the officer would have made the stop is too uncertain of a test for them to adopt. So as long as you have a reason for the stop, you're going to be good to go. As long as there is an objectively valid basis for the stop, a pretextual stop can be reasonable. There are those limits. You can't violate equal protection, which is you can't stop individuals for discriminatory purposes. You can't disproportionately target minorities. And second, the scope of the search needs to be limited to the actual reason for the stop, unless actual additional evidence presents itself. That needs to be readily apparent. There is an alternative test, which is, would the reasonable officer have made the stop? However, there is an issue with this alternative test, which is that it's the subjective intent of the officer, and that is difficult to ascertain what that intent actually could be. All right, so that's really our standard for reasonable suspicion. I want to summarize before we get into one other topic regarding this. Reasonable suspicion, you need to have it before you conduct a stop. To conduct a stop, the definition of reasonable suspicion is that it needs to be an articulable set of facts that leads the officer to believe a suspect has or is about to commit a crime. This needs to be more than a hunch, but it's less than probable cause. And so we have our several cases where you actually need to see something. You can't just guess that something was going on. But the totality of the circumstances could also lead one to believe that a crime is ongoing enough to make the stop. And then we also talked about pretextual stops. Pretextual stops, meaning that you're stopping the suspect for potential crime one, even though you are hoping to find evidence of potential crime two. The limits of that is obviously you can't be discriminatory, and the scope needs to be limited to the actual first stop until additional evidence presents itself. Okay, one other thing that we need to talk about is criminal profiles and race when it comes to stops, because generally stops tend to target minorities as well. A lot of departments are going to compile a list of individual characteristics that, when combined, are going to describe a person who is more likely to commit a certain kind of crime. Using this kind of profile typically is utilized by officers, which helps them to develop a reasonable suspicion. So now it's a matter of whether or not these profiles can constitutionally be used to generate a reasonable suspicion. The issue with this is because these profiles tend to target minorities. There's a little bit of an issue there. So we have a case here, Harris versus State, which says the stop is reasonable if it is based on the detaining officer's ability to point to specific and articulable facts, which, taken together with rational inferences from those facts, reasonably warrant the intrusion. That is restating our definition of what is reasonable. A profile may be used to show the suspicion, but the profile needs to describe characteristics that are unique to the crime committer that does not match with the characteristics of and activities of innocent individuals. If the profile is too generic, it's not going to cut it. In this case, the profile was too generic. In other words, it did catch innocent individuals and subjected innocent individuals to a search based on that profile. According to the court, even in the eyes of a reasonable, prudent, and experienced police officer, there was no basis for reasonable suspicion. We've got other cases too along the lines here. According to Reed versus Georgia, if the factors describe too much innocent conduct, we're going to be worried about random stops. But if we look at Quarles, another case, innocent conduct may be considered as well in certain circumstances. This is going to be if there are additional facts that limit the number of if it limits the number of innocent individuals who may be targeted by the profile. In this case that we're talking about, the profile was too generic, and so there was no reasonable suspicion. I do want to mention one other thing with race, though. There's this case here that we have, Coleman versus State. This case does say that you can use race as an identifying factor as long as it's not the only identifying factor. And this identifying factor needs to be provided by a reliable source. You can't just assume that the person who committed the crime is one race or another. It needs to be provided by a reliable source, and you need to look not only at the race, but you need to height, build, hair color, whatever else it might be. to help the officers determine who a potential suspect might be before they go and conduct a stop based off of a profile that creates reasonable suspicion. So that's everything that we talked about regarding this material. As far as stops go, we will continue our discussion in another episode, and instead of focusing on seizures, brief seizures, we will be focusing on brief searches. And this is going to introduce Terry versus Ohio, one of the landmark cases regarding brief searches, and specifically this is commonly known as a Terry frisk. And we'll talk about Terry frisk, the scope of frisks, and then also administrative stops and searches. All right, I'll catch you later. Have a good one. Bye. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Law Schoolers. Before I let you go, there are four things I want to say. The first thing is if you enjoyed these episodes and if you enjoyed the website, I would invite you to go and join Law Schoolers Pro. And you can do that by going to lawschoolers.com/join. It's a way for you to support us, but there's also a lot of features there that I think you will enjoy. Second thing is that nearly all of our episodes are unedited. The only ones that aren't are pre-law materials, and the reason for that is so you can actually see the legal material in its raw form as I'm learning it as well. The third thing is that the information contained in these episodes are specifically only for educational purposes. They're not to be used as legal advice, and with that, the fourth thing is if it is used as legal advice, we are not liable. That is, Law Schoolers is not liable for any legal outcomes. Thank you again for enjoying the show. Have a good one.